So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Jake Cantor, sitting in for Ollie Mann. On today's show, John Whittingdale reveals his white paper on the next 11 years for the BBC. With arguments over independence, regulation and star salaries brewing, we discuss a historic moment for the corporation. Plus, the new day closes, the Independent makes its first profits in a decade, Robert Peston plays consequences, and we play a media quiz to end all media quizzes. That's all to come on today's Media Podcast. And joining me on a sunny Friday morning at the Hospital Club is media writer Maggie Brown and the director of the Edinburgh International Television Festival, Lisa Campbell. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Lisa, it's been a busy week for you away from the BBC, hasn't it?
It has, yes. We had our big launch this week and we announced our McTaggart speaker. So
go on then.
Very exciting. It is the founder and CEO of Vice Media, Shane Smith.
That's a great booking, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. I think, it's a fascinating brand. I mean, it's gone from an obscure sort of alternative magazine to a global media powerhouse, really, in the space of 2 decades. So it's a fascinating story about the brand. I think there'll be lots of interesting stuff to talk about in terms of its journalism, advertising, revenue, distribution, how it's now actually getting into bed with the TV world. So it'll be weeks before the launch of Viceland in the UK. So I think, he'll certainly be provocative, generating headlines,
you think?
Probably, yes. I mean, I think his quote was something like, "This year will be a bloodbath." I think a recent event, he went on stage and lay down and a band joined him and sang and that kind of thing. I'm hoping he won't do that.
So you didn't think Kevin Ligo should have done it this year? What did the old guard at the television festival think?
Well, Kevin Ligo will be there anyway because, of course, the famous controller sessions do invite all of those channel bosses. So we'll be getting his vision for ITV and his plans with his new team. And also we have the leaders debate, and that's where we have all the channel bosses from the various channels talking about the big picture stuff. So we'll have 2 doses of Kevin as it is.
There's a bit of an obsession with Vice at the moment in the broadcasting industry. Do you feel that, Maggie?
Well, I think it's really good because it's a new entrant. And I also think that they go to places that often the conventional media are either a bit too scared to go to, or because it has a different perspective. It isn't actually doing current affairs or news or whatever we want to call it from the perspective of just one country. And I think that that makes a difference. And it's captured young people's imagination.
Yeah, I think that's
too.
The really interesting thing, isn't it? Is the way they've targeted and retained millennials. And that is another big challenge for the big media players here.
But they'll have to work within the constraints of Ofcom's impartiality rules on TV, won't they? So that will be interesting to see how they tackle that.
It will, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's move on to the big story of the week, and really the biggest story of the past year. It's the BBC's charter renewal. As expected, most of the extreme policy suggestions have evaporated, but the white paper John Whittingdale revealed on Thursday is not lightweight. The BBC Trust will be binned in favour of a new unitary board and Ofcom regulation. More on that in a moment. There are also changes to iPlayer's remit. BBC Studios was given the green light. Top talent will have to reveal their pay. And the DCMS has found £60 million down the back of the sofa for more kids and arts programmes. Guys, I wondered if I could just get your initial reaction. Good or bad for the BBC, this white paper? Maggie.
Well, it's basically good because the BBC has an assured 11-year term, not 10 years. And I'm long enough in the tooth to remember times when people wanted even shorter charters than 10 years. So this is a good outcome if the BBC is talking about survival. It also has an index linking license fee. Now, that doesn't mean very much at the moment because we hardly have any inflation. In fact, we're almost in deflationary times. But nonetheless, it has the knowledge that the license fee will no longer be frozen, which it has been since 2010. Plus, it also has the additional household growth that we're obviously going to have and continue having because our population is growing so much. So on those fronts, which are the crucial, how the BBC will look at the world, do we have the money? Is the licence fee continuing? It's even going to still be a criminal offence not to pay. Have we got an assured term? They're home and dry. But there are a lot of details in here which include a whole new licensing regime for the BBC. Now, Ofcom is a well-regarded regulator, but it does not have the competence at the moment to regulate the BBC. So the whole regime is going to have to be rethought. Now, we know that that was going to be the case because the current system has been shown to be very, very faulty. And if all of the things work out and the new regime stops a lot of the abuses, that will actually be good for the BBC. If a lot of the changes proposed, including very radical ones about the whole of the BBC's commissioning, £780 million of in-house production being up for grabs. If all of those things happen beneficially, then the BBC may be in a very strong position. And you've mentioned, and I mean, there's masses of things to talk about.
There's so much to go.
The iPlayer closures, so I won't go on and on. If everything works out, the BBC is in an extremely strong position. But there are an awful lot of question marks that were raised. I sat down and I read the whole thing yesterday and I found myself...
132 pages.
I did.
That's dedication.
And, well, because I thought, you know, obviously I'm coming here and why should people listen to me if I haven't done my homework? But, I mean, there were moments when I gasped, for example, Ofcom will be able to fine the BBC if it doesn't actually adhere to its licence agreements. And I thought, goodness me, you know, if it doesn't do what? Enough...
But Ofcom has the power to fine all broadcasters currently.
I know, but when you actually see it in cold, I understand that, but it has done that. Remember, over the abuses of phone voting for big shows. So I don't think that what I'm trying to say is that when you actually see it in a white paper that you can find the BBC Ofcom, I kind of thought, wow, you know, really.
It's been a fascinating week, though, hasn't it? Because it was like this great drama, unfolding drama. With a, you know, villain as the central character of you know, villainous politician, and you know, this kind of idea of something dreadful was going to happen, and you know, as Whittingdale then described it was, you know, hysterical speculation by left-wing lovies. So the whole thing kind of ended in a bit of a
That moment in Parliament, didn't he?
You could see
the satisfaction
loved it, didn't
on his
he?
Face.
Yeah. But you know, after this sort of great unfolding drama and you know, and talent getting involved and everything, it then felt like a bit of a dull ending to the drama with but probably this time a dull ending that everyone wanted. They didn't really want the radical proposals, the, you know, the huge shrinking of the BBC and size and scope. So it was probably the best ending we could have had in
not
a lot of ways.
Not quite the denouement of Dr. Foster then.
No. But I think, you know, so that sounds like it's a win for the BBC. But I do think, you know, as Maggie says, there are still major areas of concern. I think the Ofcom point is a good one. You know, the fact that the BBC Trust was more of a watchdog and it was very much from the perspective of the public and does this deliver public value, whereas Ofcom's role is much more about the market and the commercial impact. So, you know, does that mean the priorities are going to be what's the impact on Sky, what's the impact on ITV? So, you know, that's something, I think, of concern.
But of course, you see, if it works, it will actually benefit the BBC. There is this side of me which just doesn't know. If the BBC can be more focused in what is a rapidly changing world, I mean, you've just talked about the McTaggart lecturer being from Vice. I mean, you know, 10 years ago that didn't exist. It would not have happened. So if the BBC emerges from this in a stronger position, even maybe with the National Audit Office doing, I know this is a bone of contention, it's going to be given oversight.
Well, this is one of
the
things that they believe will threaten the independence.
But actually, having read National Audit Office reports in the past, not all of them getting a lot of publicity. For example, they did a very good report on how the BBC ran its soaps and continuing dramas, and came out with a virtually glowing report that it was all done incredibly efficiently.
Yeah, so it already does all these kind of market reports.
But they don't have
so
unfettered access to the BBC.
But what I'm saying is that this is the other side of this, that if it stops the kind of digital media initiative costing £100 million, if it stops utterly wrong payoffs, if it stops those kind of abuses, then it's actually in everyone's interest that this should happen, including the BBC, if there is something wrong with its regulation.
Yeah, so what about the board? I mean, the BBC believes that some of the proposals that government are a bit more insidious, than they look.
I tell you what I really think. I think Whittingdale did such a ham-fisted job over this whole thing that nobody, including Channel 4, which we'll come on to, nobody really trusts him anymore. I think he's got a real problem of trust. So when this white paper comes out, instead of people saying, yes, we know that the trust doesn't work, we know there has to be a new body, they immediately assume the very worst is being planned. And I can't really give very much benefit of the doubt to anything that comes out of that department. So I actually hear what the Kosminskis and the BBC are saying about this. And I would prefer, yes, there to be an absolutely independent BBC board, because it isn't the same as the trust. It is a new body, and it really does have to be
independent. It will be closer to editorial than the trust is at the moment.
Well, they're going to have a real problem structuring all of this, but it will be. And what we need to know is that the BBC is not a state broadcaster. It is an independent broadcaster.
And some of the bigger issues, like talent pay, the suggestion is, in reports and briefings that we've had, is that David Cameron and Downing Street has intervened on many of the big issues and actually helped create this more even-handed report that we have yesterday.
Yeah, I think.
Do you think that's worked in the BBC's favour?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the speculation was that talent pay would be published at the level of 150,000, and that's moved up to 450,000, which
I think they're saying there's about 10 stars that fall into that bracket. I mean, we could probably have a guess at who they are already.
We could, and I think the press already have.
I think
they?
Chris Evans has
Gary
already
Lineker,
yes, he's already identified himself.
Yes,
Graham Norton. Yeah, surely Fiona Bruce, Dimbleby. I mean, we could go on, can't we?
You know, just going back to the NAO point, I do think there are concerns around the independence and how we're just going to, you know, assure that, really, because the NAO reports to MPs on the, you know, the National Audit Committee. So is this going to be a sort of, you know, Finance and Audit Committee is a kind of a government department then, with, you know, for the BBC? And so therefore any kind of creative risk taking or sort of, you know, big changes that the BBC wants to do could be then seen as a waste of money. I mean, I agree with Maggie's point completely. There's been incredible awful examples of waste amongst, you know, in the BBC. I think there's, you know,
and
EastEnders.
And done in clear sight as well. That's the whole thing about the payoffs. It's
and
not
it's still going
they
on,
were hidden.
You know, with EastEnders. You know, that's the whole redesign of the set.
Yeah,
and everything's
been
delayed.
Yeah, that was an NAO report this week. Three years, more than 2 years behind schedule.
Mm. So, you know, clearly there are problems in it, and that needs to be looked at. But if, you know, Whittingdale has gone on so much about distinctiveness, and if you've then got a government department essentially saying, oh no, you know, the bean counting, and that's going to be a waste of money, I mean, really, how can you then deliver this creative risk-taking and distinctiveness that he's really stressing?
And a couple of big wins for lobbying groups in the industry. Contestable funding. Kids campaigners have been asking for that for a long time. An additional pot of money that commercial broadcasters could potentially dip into. And of course, BBC Studios, where the BBC has been asked now to drop all commissioning quotas for in-house.
Well, there's three things, really. I mean, the most striking is actually this £8 million a year being devoted to creating 150 jobs for local media journalists, which the newspaper publishers, the NMA, have been able to land. I find that pretty incredible, really. I knew that something of that order was happening, but when you actually see it in cold print, and it's going to be based in Birmingham, and they're going to be fanning out across all the different courts and local authorities in the country, and providing some kind of central resource that newspapers can access, I find that really interesting. On the contestable...
Are you prepared to share your theory on that?
Well, my theory is that Ashley Highfield, who runs the Johnston Press, was one of the advisors to Whittingdale on this whole white paper. And, of course, before that, he worked at the BBC running its new technology wing. So I think he was extremely well placed on that one. Having said that, I mean, it has been something that James Harding has conceded way back in September. But it's an area, if those of us who remember our history over the past 10 years, the BBC wanted to move into ultra local television and provide a kind of service somewhat like this, which, if they'd been clever and they'd boosted their local radio stations with extra staff, they could have probably got away with as a website, but they had to do it in their own sort of inimitable way. It was even run from Birmingham. The new trust intervened and stopped it dead. But now it's kind of come back, but in a different iteration because of the democratic deficit. And so on the one hand, it is a form of... It's not top slicing because it's within the BBC's control, but it is a form of diverting funds away from the central business, I would say, of being a broadcaster. On the contestable funding, it's a very small amount.
20 million a year?
Yeah, well, it's a relatively small amount. It's only for 3 years.
In the context of the BBC's content budget, yes.
And it's money that's already there because it was taken from previous attempts under the last charter agreement to pay for extra things. What I don't understand, I am all in favour of extra funds for children's television, most certainly, and for arts for that matter. And I would add in religion too, which I think has been deeply, deeply ignored by certainly commercial broadcasters, public service broadcasters. What I don't know is if it's all very well if you're a children's television maker accessing the money. So where will the programmes be broadcast? Are they going to be extra programmes on CBBC or CBeebies? Are they going to be on Channel 4? Are they going to be on CITV? I mean, I know there are inventive people out there and they'll find a way, but you do have to ask yourself, where are the slots for these programmes? Or is it just a kind of a subsidy? I actually hate subsidies like this. I've never really liked the contestable funding. I don't like it in real life because what you find is loads of people just trying to target funds, you know, give me some money. And it would be far
better.
It's
also who's overseeing it, isn't it? And who's making those decisions.
Big questions. Yeah. And Lisa, finally, a word on BBC Studios?
Oh, gosh. Well,
that small subject.
Yeah. Well, it's been waved through, hasn't it?
That's good news.
Yeah. The idea that the BBC will be able to produce for anybody now, and that producers will be able to compete for the big brands to produce EastEnders and you know, long-running series. I think there are still so many question marks around BBC Studios. I mean, it hasn't got off to a good start with a, you know, talent exodus. Lots of questions around, is it going to be nimble enough and flexible enough? Will it be able to compete as it should? I mean, it should ideally become a big creative powerhouse globally, you know, producing for people all over, all different broadcasters. But then if it fails to, then the BBC will just end up producing news and current affairs. I think that's a really bad thing. Everybody else is getting into their own content production. Look at ITV Studios buying everything that moves. Vice has its own in-house production. BuzzFeed, everybody, it's all about you owning the content and you owning the rights. And I just worry about that long-term future for studios, really, and also for the smaller independents, because I think, yeah, great thing if you're wall-to-wall and you can bid for EastEnders, but for smaller indies, that's just more competition in the market for the smaller channels.
Okay, and on a quieter week, this may well have led the show, but Channel 4 published its annual report this week, which is always an interesting read. Maggie, what do you make of where Channel 4 is at the moment?
Well, as somebody who wrote the history of Channel 4, the story of Channel 4, A License to be Different, and having seen all of the previous five administrations in operation and having studied the track records, I would say that the current one is the best one. It's done very well. It wasn't necessarily going to be the case. I mean, they had to fill this huge gap, as we can now see, in their finances and in their programming, left by the exit of Big Brother. but it has turned into a successful creative renewal, in my opinion.
Record revenues, record content spend.
Yeah, it isn't just that, though. I mean, the actual... there are nights when you can look at the schedule and you think, well, where's the public service broadcasting? But there are other nights when, oh, my God, is it really there? And so on a huge number of fronts... And as I say, this wasn't preordained when the current regime came in. And I'm not in their pockets. I'm just observing. But since 2010, it's been a rocky road. But I think that they have really done extremely well in very testing circumstances.
Well, on those testing circumstances, obviously the threat of privatisation has been sort of hanging in the air since last year. Report in the Telegraph this week that plan has been dropped.
Yes.
And the government is assessing other options, including part privatisation, potentially moving Channel 4 to Birmingham and selling its HQ on Horse Ferry Road. What do you make of some of these proposals doing the rounds?
Well, I'm very glad that the privatisation option has been dropped, because the key thing about privatisation, if it's a genuine one, if it's done according to the rules, is that an operation is being run badly and it can be improved by the input of properly focused commercial owners. Now, Channel 4 isn't a basket case. It could have been, but it is not a basket case. It's actually increasing its cushion of cash to see it through tough times. It's not making any call on the public purse, apart from, of course, having free slots and airtime. The chairman, Charles Gourassa, said it very well at the annual press conference, and he said that it was actually delivering well over £500 million of money a year into the creative sector from private sources. This can only be a good thing. So I think they've had a very good year. I'm not surprised that the privatisation has gone away, because
it hasn't really, because it's part privatisation is now on the agenda. So what does that mean? Inevitable privatisation at some point?
We have no facts at the moment.
No, I tell you exactly what I think. If PAC, the independent producers, can move from getting extra access to BBC airtime to actually supplying the whole thing, then PACT are going to lobby ferociously against any kind of mucking around with this great patron that they've got there, which has served them all very, very well.
I would say that PACT have been extremely quiet on this issue.
They have, because there's been a falling out. But
they have a beef over terms of trade.
I know.
But what I love about this story that just came out of the blue is the Channel 4 moved to Birmingham, and it seems, you know, Birmingham is the place to be these days, isn't it?
You've got with BBC Three going there as well.
BBC Three, and then Bauer buying the Orion Group. It's all about, you know, the growth of the Midlands. So,
news. Indeed. Well, there's quite rightly, in my opinion, been an outrage feeling in Birmingham that they have been completely slaughtered in favour of Manchester and Salford. And I mean, I'm somebody who trained on the Birmingham Post and Mail, and I think Birmingham is an absolute powerhouse, and I don't think it would particularly harm Channel 4 if it did have to go to Birmingham. At the same time, I don't see why many staff would feel that way.
Could you see many of the top commissioners?
No, I mean, look what happened with the BBC and, you know,
yes, but it's survived. But the point is, I don't actually think any government has the right to behave like the Roman Empire, you know, and just order a television station to go to a city outside of London.
What I do think is interesting is that social mobility seems to have just completely disappeared off the agenda. It's all about BAME and 50% of women being on screen. You know, there was a report out this week saying that white working class boys were not going to university. They're outnumbered by women. And so I do think that that's something that's just completely a huge issue and is not being addressed at all.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
As an impartial stand-in host, I'm duty-bound to tell you, dear listener, how important it is that you support this podcast. There's a few ways you can do this. If money is tight, and in this freelance media world that's entirely possible, then all this podcast asks you to do is write a review on our iTunes page, telling curious souls why they should listen. Just search iTunes and The Media Podcast, all one word, and leave us a review. Of course, if you're one of those freelancers that has a particularly flush month, you can show your support by donating some of that bonus to making an episode of this show that you're getting for free. Your cash is the only way we can keep the quality high and the output regular. And if you're one of those rare beasts these days with a permanent contract, a salary, firstly, well done. But how wonderful it would be if you could also help us on a more regular basis. Go to themediapodcast.com/dedicate and take out a monthly subscription. That's themediapodcast.com/dedicate. Thanks. Now back to the show. Okay, let's tackle some other stories in brief this week. Just 9 weeks after its launch, Trinity Mirror's New Day has folded. It aimed for a circulation of 200,000, but at its end had just 40,000, and that was after £50 million was spent on marketing by its parent company. What went wrong, Maggie?
Well, it wasn't needed. There wasn't a market gap. Nobody wanted to buy it. It didn't have anything particularly distinguishing to say.
Well, it was incredible to decide to produce a newspaper for people who don't like newspapers and just, you know, do some market research and go, oh, okay, well, let's do that. No one wants it. But it just came out of nowhere and then disappeared equally quickly. I think if they'd done a sort of much bigger, longer, noisier launch period, perhaps it would have had more of a chance, but, you know, just pulling the plug on it so quickly, I think it's really sad.
Was it a bit worthy? That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Trying,
I mean, you know,
hard.
You, and also no sports news.
It was aimed at
women.
Didn't
get the results, did you?
It was aimed at working women.
Well, the fact that you had the Leicester City win and because of their deadlines, they weren't able to put that on the front page. I mean, it just looked ridiculous, you know, if it's a newspaper without the news you want, really.
Well, it's a good experiment, really. And in a way, it's a kind of neat, you can dovetail it really with The Independent actually appearing to do relatively well as a broadsheet online.
On that point, it's almost like you were reading my script, Maggie. The Independent has doubled its headcount at its news site to 90. That's after 100 staff left following the closure of the print edition. And one more stat, editor Christian Broughton told Press Gazette that over 10,000 people are paying $12.99 a month for their digital edition, twice the number who subscribe to the newspaper. What's going right, Lisa?
I mean, I think all those figures are really encouraging. You know, doubling the staff, they've doubled the downloads as well for the app. You know, it's a really positive step. I mean, it's very sad to see the end of, you know, the print edition as we did. But of course, it's just going to be dependent on the profitability. And we know that online advertising isn't attracting the same kind of revenue as print did. They're just saying, you know, it's doing well on that front, but we don't have the numbers. And I think it's really too early to say until we actually know what kind of the revenue situation
is. So you're not breaking out the bunting just yet, Maggie?
I'm not, no, but I'm hopeful.
And they've got a few of their star columnists still, haven't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely, all the big names are there, and some of them are extremely good. I mean, they have actually, I mean, this is a worrying thing in a way, that newspapers have really had these huge ranks of sort of sub-editors and rather unknown people getting the paper ready and doing all the things you have to do. And actually, if you can boil it down to a much simpler organisation, if you just go online, but you have to keep your star names, you've got things to say. And remember, they all have quite strong opinions. You know, they're
yeah, I think they've got a great lineup of columnists, and I think it's really encouraging that they've retained those, and they're you know, Robert Fisk and Grace Dent
exactly.
and Hamish McRae. Brilliant.
People bought the paper for certain people, and Hamish McRae is an extremely
so presumably people go to the website for the same people.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's move on to the big radio story this week, which is that Bauer has bought Midlands network Orion. Orion was formed when Global was forced to sell stations including Wyvern, Beacon and BRMB back in 2009. They became Free Radio. The deal means the second largest commercial radio network in the UK gets that little bit bigger. Maggie?
Well, I mean, I was in Birmingham when BRMB started and I have a huge affection for it. And of course, you're really talking here about the key commercial stations for the East and the West Midlands. And I also, of course, travel through the Midlands because I live in Wales some of the time, in mid-Wales. I think it's... I just don't know what Bauer will do to them, but I would love to see the BRMB brand revive because it really had a resonance in the West Midlands. But as it stands, it looks like, as you say, one not quite so big radio group buys a tiddler and gets a bit bigger. But
well,
I hope
it will
more
have
than
a listening share of 34%, commercial radio anyway.
Good start.
Yeah.
And more good news for Birmingham.
Exactly, yes. So, you know, we might have Channel 4 in Birmingham, local news in Birmingham.
Let's just
radio
all move
Birmingham.
To Birmingham.
I think
we'll
should.
We'll do a media podcast special in Birmingham, though.
Well, when the high-speed train comes, remember, you'll be there in only a few minutes.
Well, it's supposed to be an amazing location for creative startups and digital startups, isn't it? It's kind of, you know, what Shoreditch was 5 years ago or something. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we joke about it, but actually... Let's all move to Birmingham.
Okay, on to ITV now. And you may have seen that Robert Peston launched a new Sunday morning show this week. Lisa, did you watch it? I did.
I love the way he started, where, you know, he's like, welcome to the new show. And yes, I am bleeding nervous. You know, and
it
I
was
thought,
good.
It was. I like the fact he did that. He was self-deprecating because, of course, he was so brash and annoying when he said he was going to humiliate the BBC when he first moved over to ITV. So I was quite glad to see a sort of about turn there. But, I mean... You know, the ratings have been terrible, haven't they? And he was
160,000 viewers, which is a tenth of the Andrew Marr show.
Yes, and also that a repeat of Jeremy Kyle got sort of double that, didn't it, straight afterwards? Because they blamed the hot weather, but, you know, a repeat of Jeremy Kyle got everyone back inside.
But, you know, overall, it's good at ITV is going back to Sunday morning.
It should be applauded, I think.
It should be. I mean, you know, this was where Weekend World, admittedly later in the morning, used to have its home. And they've had various attempts with Jonathan Dimbleby. Heston is a must-watch. And I of course it's going to be struggling hugely. But I would say good on ITV. And I hope they stick with it. Heston will make them stick with
it. You've got to give the things the time to grow and to really establish themselves and get that right tone and everything. But, you know, I quite liked it.
It was pretty confident,
yeah,
I felt.
I think
and Allegra Stratton with Screeny McScreenface was very good.
Yeah, I thought she went well.
It'll be all about the bookings. Who will come on the show?
Yeah.
Well, they've
got
Jeremy Corbyn this week. Well, that's what Robert Peston said at the end of last week's show. So.
And they, of course, they had terrible technical problems apparently as well, which I'm sure was horrendous for them at the time with the live show. And they had no running order on screen, and they couldn't contact the presenter. They, you know, they couldn't do the talkback. So, actually, hats off to them. You know.
And what do we make of this controversy around the ITV European referendum debate? So, after hearing Nigel Farage was invited on to lock horns with David Cameron, the official out campaign Vote Leave was up in arms that one of its own prominent supporters wasn't selected for the show.
I think they should just shut up and let ITV get on with it. You know, it's up to them who they choose to book, and if the people wish to be booked, then let them do it. You know, we're not some sort of they shouldn't be such control freaks. This is partly why they're having problems cutting through.
And the Vote Leave campaign sent this sort of bizarre email claiming that there will be consequences in the future for ITV.
It's just bizarre. What on earth did they mean by that? I think they're just crazy.
Do we think that was signed off by Gove and Boris Johnson and Co?
I can't see Boris Johnson.
I'm kind of scared to say anything in case I get consequences as a result.
Okay, before we go, there's just time for our media quiz.
Oh, no.
That wasn't at all forced. This week entitled Twitter Tease. In a totally original idea, we have gathered three genuine tweets from media people talking about a news story. I'm going to read out the tweet and you're going to tell me...
Hang on, I just want to challenge this. A totally original idea that was at the Edinburgh We Love TV quiz the other night, Matt Hill.
I'm going to distance myself from this completely in the same way that the Vote Leave guys are distancing themselves from that ITV statement. So, the first tweet is from BuzzFeed's Scott Bryan. They've just confirmed that Maria McCurlin, who was the voiceover in the original show, will return to voice the special. The special of what, though?
Oh, you're a trash. Oh, yes. No, I'm looking forward to this. Oh, my name. Maggie Brown.
I was so excited about this. I think it's a brilliant, a genius idea, isn't it? Mm. Sex up Brexit with Eurotrash.
I think Perfect. It's only one off, though. I mean, it would be lovely if it was running all the way through.
Well, you never know. See how it goes. They might bring it back.
I love this retro idea because sometimes they work really well.
It's Eurotrash, which is returning to Channel 4. For an hour-long special in the run-up to the EU referendum.
Yeah, bring it on, Channel 4.
Our second tweet is from Alex Connock, who is the MD of Shine North. Good news that BBC Three commissioning is moving out of London, and good for...
Birmingham. Lisa, Birmingham.
Is your name Birmingham?
I love Birmingham. I've even renamed myself.
Okay, it's that city again. The decision has been trumpeted by the Birmingham Mail, who have campaigned for the BBC to move more resources to the city. And our final tweet from News UK. Don't miss tomorrow's special 10,000th edition.
Lisa,
Sunday Times.
I think Lisa just pipped you. Yes, you're right, the Sunday Times, and no mean feat, 10,000 editions.
It is, it's great. And so many innovations in the 60s when you look back on it. It's amazing.
So, I think that means Lisa's our winner.
That's right.
Ooh, what do I get?
What do I expect?
And what's my prize?
You get the accolade of our listeners.
Didn't even have a buzzer this time.
Okay, that's our show for today. My thanks to Maggie Brown and Lisa Campbell. If you're new to this show, welcome. Make a media podcast shaped hole in your life that we can fill every fortnight. You can subscribe via iTunes for iPhone or Pocket Casts on Android phones or a whole number of other podcatchers. Subscribing means you never miss an episode, so go do it now. Thanks to Harry Leake, the Ensign Media Company, Scott Lebrey and Max Christian for adding to our list of monthly subscribers. We still need more of you if this programme is going to be around long term. Whether you're APs, prop buyers, the talent, join us. Keep us on air, keep us regular. Just go to themediapodcast.com/dedicate. It takes 1 minute. Do it now. My name is Jake Cantor. The producer was Matt Hill. The Media Podcast is a PPM production. Until next time, goodbye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.